Hello and welcome to Unlucky 13, episode 13 of The Bird and the Beard. I'm your host, The Bird, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, The Beard. How are you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I've just had a nice day off today, enjoying the first day of October by staying indoors and doing nothing. Now, I did a massive clear out of my room because I have clothes that I've had since I was like 8. And I thought I should probably get rid of some of them. Though I did keep some of them, I will admit, I did keep some things. So, I have several piles of clothes on the floor until I can, you know, ship them off to charity shops or whatever. And the cat is delighted because she thinks she's now got 10 new beds to sleep on. So that was a good start. What about you? What have you been up to this week?
Just hanging out, really. Just working. Yeah, I work nights, so it's kind of... Say, hey, I'm going to get some sleep, and then you feel restless, but I got some flicks in, and just hanging about, really, doing a few shows here and there. Last week, I did a bunch of shows, so I felt like I was in demand or something, so it makes the guy feel special, but really exhausted at the same time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, I don't know. No one ever asked me to do shows. I'm forever alone. And then when they do, I'm always busy. It's terrible timing. People just probably think I'm really antisocial.
Nah, not at all.
Well, yeah. Thank you. So, did you watch anything worth mentioning?
Yeah, actually, I watched some stuff. I watched two movies that my friend brought me. He's a distributor, so he gets random deals from different people. One of which is an American company called Mill Creek. So I get stuff on the cheap from them. He brought me four brand new Blu-rays they put out, one being The Legend of Billie Jean, which I finally got to watch on glorious 1080p. Helen Slater with your sexy ass, you know, doing your outlaw thing. It's still enjoyable. If you want to hear my love fest for Billie Jean and Eric Bergstrom's love fest for Billie Jean, listen to a couple Cinema Beefs ago where we covered it. That and Pump Up the Volume, another Christian Slater joint. Other than that, I watched a movie called Neighbors, which is not the Neighbors you're thinking of, like either the television show or the...
Not the Australian. No.
Or the Zac Efron... Zac Efron, whatever that movie is. What's that chunky guy? Seth Rogen, that movie. No, not that movie either. But it's one from the early 80s, which starred John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, where John Belushi played the straight man. He played the straight-laced guy in this movie. He didn't play crazy. He played opposite to the worst neighbors on the planet, played by Dan Aykroyd, and very attractive Kathy Moriarty in this movie. And it's just batshit crazy. They're just like the worst neighbors on the planet. And they're like, Kathy Moriarty is constantly flirting, or is she flirting with John Belushi's character? And yeah, that makes it so awesome. But, there's other stuff too. I watched Gotham, the second episode of Gotham. And the first episode, actually, since we talked. But Gotham is one of those shows that it's probably one of the best starts to a show I've ever seen ever, because not from just a comic book standpoint, but the fact that they got the characters that the actors that are playing the characters, they got them for the most part spot on, you know, from people who are just a novice who know about Batman. This isn't a Batman show, although they are spending not a lot of time, but. What I feel is too much time on the Bruce Wayne as a child aspect of the show, because there's so much more going on. And Donal Logue is an actor I know and love. He plays the awesome dirty cop Harvey Bullock on this series, and he's great in it. And I never thought I'd say this, but Jada Pinkett Smith is great in something, and she's really wonderful in this role.
I don't think I've ever actually seen her in anything. I've seen Madagascar, but obviously she's not actually in that. She's just a voice.
Well, she plays a badass crime boss in this one, and she's pretty ruthless. And they got a lot of young... All the people are young. All your villains are not quite villains yet. You have a young Selina Kyle. You have a guy, Oswald Cobblepot, who's not the Penguin yet. He's still Oswald Cobblepot, but he's building to that. You have an Edward Nygma, who obviously is the Riddler eventually. You know, they're all budding villains. But in the last episode, they had a great duo. And Frank Whaley and Lily Taylor playing these child traffickers for a pretty popular Batman villain called the Toymaker. And yeah, they're badass out there. And I never seen Lily Taylor act like that before, but she was pretty ruthless. And I was proud of her in a way, because she's always that, oh, I'm this meek white chick who, you know, easy, boo, I'm afraid of ghosts, or boo, I'm afraid of relationships, or, you know, stupid stuff like that. And
yeah.
So Gotham's really great. You guys should watch Gotham.
Cool. Sounds good. A friend told me about a theory, a Batman theory. And I think it is a comic now, but obviously it's not sort of the mainstream storyline, where instead of Bruce Wayne being the survivor during the robbery as a child, he was the one that was killed, and his parents respectively became Batman and the Joker because of how they dealt with the grief over the death of their son. And I did look it up. You know, some of the artwork looked pretty cool, and I haven't like read any of it. I only saw a couple of panels, but it looked quite interesting.
Yeah, they made some really wacky multiverse Batman storylines over the years, and that's one of them. And they went crazy, not crazy, but really really different, like stuff you never thought they would go to. And there's a great Batman book called The Killing Joke, where the Joker is just disgusting. I mean, he rapes a bad girl to paralysis, and you know, to where she's finally in the wheelchair. That's where her Birds of Prey character comes from, where she's in the wheelchair and she's the Oracle now. And it's just disgusting. They don't show the rape in the panels, you know, but he shows that how ruthless your Joker can be, you know, and that's just to piss off Batman, you know, the Bats, the guy who constantly taunts him, you know, obviously. And what else did I watch? I watched the shitty Fog remake that was for Duncan's show. I'm not even going to talk about that. Just listen to the show. You'll find out how bad it is. He does the podcast under the stairs. I think I'm talking about the...
Right, I have seen The Fog. I haven't seen the original one, actually, I don't think.
I don't know, but that movie ruined the original for me. So that's... Some people thought, what do you mean you don't like Carpenter's The Fog? I don't like it because the remake ruined it for me. But that's why I don't like The Fog. I wouldn't do the failed misconception that, you know, I'd say, hey, I'm going to go watch The Fog, the remake, before I watch the original one. And that's a no-no, people. Do not do that because, yeah... brain raped, you know, that's all I'm saying. And it's bad. It stuck its metaphorical dick in my brain and raped it. Okay, it's bad. And
this is some weird face.
Yeah, there you go, exactly. And then we watched a very awesome Fly remake with Jeff Goldblum, the one everybody loves, and as well you should.
Dick in a jar.
Yes.
I'm sorry, that's all I think about when I think of The Fly. It's a really good movie, but that's like the only thing that's stuck with me, is that he's got his penis in a jar in the medicine cabinet.
It literally brought Jamie Jenkins to sentimental tears, that episode. That never happened on a podcast, so you know. You can listen to that. It's out now, because Duncan's a workaholic. I'm a slacker, you know, so.
That was, I will listen to it, not, you're a slacker.
Well, you can go both on that one.
I know, maybe I did. You'll never know.
Ghostbusters 1 and 2, because those are worth mentioning, because they're both on beautiful Blu-ray now. And Ghostbusters...
Oh, I will tell you a secret about Ghostbusters.
Go ahead.
I know how much you love my mother, because she's wild and wonderful, but she doesn't like Ghostbusters. In fact, she hates it.
I will not hold that against her.
Really? Wow. Love conquers all.
Exactly. But I think they're pretty great. And this was the first time Ghostbusters 2 was out on Blu-ray, and it looks pretty amazing, except the bad part about when they look amazing on Blu-ray, you start to see how bad 1989 special effects are.
No.
Especially the slime stuff, like the purple slime stuff, and like in the bathtub and that, but it's still a pretty enjoyable experience. It made a kid believe that you can make the Statue of Liberty walk with just some... purple ectoplasmic splooge and an NES Advantage controller, and don't forget the Jackie Wilson, people, because you need that too to make it move and get happy, you know. And
of course.
And that's about the highlights, the lowlights, whatever you want to call it, that I watched. And like I said, I have a stack of stuff here to watch. It's just we're getting to it all is the hard part. See.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I watched two films. I mean, mostly I've been doing my Criminal Minds marathon still, but I'm nearly there. I'm about halfway through, probably further than half, actually, through Series 9. And Series 10 starts today, but obviously it won't be available online for a while. So I'm nearly finished with that, so I can get back to you know, my normal programming. But I watched two movies. One of them is the 2013 film Torment, which stars Catherine Isabel, which I was quite intrigued to watch because she usually plays, you know, these weird and wonderful characters. In Supernatural, she's, you know, some sort of psychic thing. In American Mary, obviously, she's a surgeon who's a little bit on the psychotic side. In Ginger Snap, she's a freaky werewolf kid who wants to kill everyone. You know, she always plays these sort of headstrong, wonderful characters. And in Torment, she plays pretty much just, you know, your average American woman, really. You know, she's married this guy who has a son. His first wife passed away and she's the new wife. And it's just all about how the dynamic's changing and how they're trying to get the son to like the new mom and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just very average, I suppose. And then they go to their holiday house, I suppose. I'm not entirely sure where it is, I can't remember. But then when they get there, they realize someone else got there first because there's evidence of like squatting. And it turns out some weird people with stuffed animal masks are living there, and they decide to torture and kill them and try to adopt the son as their own. So yeah, that it's a strange film. It's not the most original thing I've seen. It, you know, there's quite a few sort of masked killers at the moment, and there's quite a few sort of psychotic families who try and adopt children as well. I've seen a few films like that.
So it's kind of like your next beast of people under the stairs kind of deal, honestly.
Yeah, that's pretty much where we're going with that. Your next meets it sort of meets more. Is it The Last House on the Left? Is that that one, or is that...
Which one?
The one where there's two girls and they go to a party and then they try to buy drugs.
Yeah, that's the one.
Off people. Yeah. It's sort of Your Next meets that more, because in the remake especially, they try to sort of bring in one of the girls, but it goes wrong. But so yeah, it was kind of interesting to watch Catherine Isabel playing a normal woman. But she did kick some ass still, so it was all good. Sure. it's got a 4.9 rating on IMDb, so obviously not the most popular film. But I think it's worth a watch. It's on Netflix, which is where I saw it, so you should probably check it out. And on the other end of the spectrum, completely wacky and mental end of the spectrum, I watched Blood Lake, Attack of the Lampreys, which is essentially just Piranha again. Like down to the Christopher Lloyd cameo and everything.
Oh, wow. It's,
seriously, if you don't know what a lamprey is, it's essentially somewhere in between a leech and an eel. You know, it's a lot bigger and it's got some gnarly looking
like
teeth. And it sucks blood, basically. But yeah, you know, it's sort of the Jaws storyline of, oh, there's something in the water, you should close the water supply and close the beaches. And no, it's tourist season, we should leave the beaches open. No, but people are dying. Oh, but money. That's basically what happens. So, you know, it's not the most original thing. And it's sort of Sharknado-esque in the sort of, and very Piranha remake in the sort of kookiness of it, you know, and the sort of comedy horror. And there's a lot of, you know, people holding pretend lampreys to their necks and screaming and pretend fighting with them and wrenching them off. You know, it's a little bit Star Trek.
This is finally inconvenient.
Yeah. So yeah, that was interesting. I think this is definitely one to watch when you've got a few beers and you've got your mates around and you want to watch something a bit crap. But, you know, it's not exactly meant to be the next Oscar-winning Hollywood blockbuster. It's a straight-to-TV movie. So, yeah. And like I say, Christopher Lloyd does have his little appearance in it. It's more than a cameo, really. He's sort of a supporting cast member, I suppose. And there's a few, you know, inventive destruction methods. My personal favorite was the teenage daughter who uses a strimmer to just sort of, you know, instead of mow the lawn, just sort of chop everyone into small pieces. And she accidentally slices her boyfriend's ear off, which is excellent.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much my week in film from one end of the spectrum to the other. That one's got a 5.1 rating on IMDb, so slightly higher than Torment. Definitely funnier, but not necessarily better.
Oh, I forgot. I will mention this because it was his birthday on Monday. I was on Graveshift Radio. The show should be out now. If not out now, it should be out soon. We did Phantasm 3, and which was Reggie Bannister's birthday on Monday, so happy birthday, Reggie, you happily skulleted bastard. And
happy birthday,
definitely. And we did Animals Attack movie as well. We did Empire of the Ants, which is a crazy fans ants movie that naturally they get into some kind of nuclear waste and they get really, really big. And there's a showdown at the end where there's a hypnotic ant who hypnotizes people with her pheromones to make them work at a sugar mill of all places.
That is beautiful.
So your final showdown is at a sugar mill, which, you know, all the ants are being, they're all led into this giant house of sugar where they're eating naturally, and then they get exploded with a conveniently placed gasoline truck, you know.
So it's sort of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids meets Eight-Legged Freaks?
It was a lot of Eight-Legged Freaks in there, but it just didn't look as good, because I swear I would never want to see a high-quality version of this film. I watched it on YouTube, and you would be able to see the wires on the ants, and it'd be a little creepy.
Oh, no.
There's a lot of, like you were talking about in your movie, they're holding the eels to their necks and saying, oh, this is inconvenient. But no, this has, like, these giant, like, terrible looking ant bodies, like, you just, like, okay, they put these together with, like, some wire and maybe some paper mache or something, and they're just, like, mounting these people. They're like, oh, it's so terrible, oh, 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 but they're just kind of like dry humping them, you know, in a way, you know.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I have massive respect for the people who can keep a straight face acting during those scenes.
Like moving parts are just like these ant carcass things that are just kind of like,
yeah,
just gyrating on them. And, you know, it's like, okay. Except for the scenes like where they show like close up, like there's a scene where they're like going down river and then there's an ant that pops out. Like, oh, scary, jump scare. And, you know, and then they move on, of course. And there's one thing they do give you, though. They do give you a little science at the beginning, which kind of explains some stuff that goes on in the movie. So, kudos to you, Empire of the Ants, you cheesy bastard film from the 70s, you know.
Actually, that was one of the good things about the Lampreys film. They didn't really do any science behind it. They just sort of went, there's more than usual, and they're eating more than usual, so they have to start eating us because there's no food left. They didn't go, you know, oh my god, they've got toxic waste, and they're now 70 size times larger than their normal size or anything like that. It was just like, oh, shit happens. Let's get on with it.
Now, granted, I don't know how true the science is behind Empire of the Ants, but, you know.
Oh, you know it's terrible.
I didn't read into it or anything, if you know what I'm saying. I just enjoyed the ride.
No, I'm that miserable bastard in the back who always goes, that would never happen. What? What? That's not... What? Did you take physics at school?
That's why you and Bloody Lizzie get along so well, see?
That's me, yeah.
You gals and your bugs.
I know, we do love our bugs. I love sharks as well, though. Anything chompy,
gotcha.
Really.
But, yeah, we decided to do go sci-fi in this episode with two alien-type films. Just talk about mine first, since I made the choice to do this.
Yeah, sure, go for it.
My choice this time around was a film that I don't hear a lot of folks talking about, so I chose to do Super 8 from 2011, which is a film that I enjoy a lot, actually. The IMDb cheap synopsis is this. During the summer of 1979, a group of friends witness a train crash and investigate subsequent unexplained events in their small town. Yeah, this movie was written and directed by J.J. Abrams, and I believe Spielberg had involvement in it too. Yeah, he's a producer on the film as well, because this is pretty much a Spielberg love fest, because back when he was a shorty, which is a lot like these kids in this movie, he would make his own movies on a Super 8 camera, you know, of all things. That's why it's called Super 8, because that's the type of camera it was. And this film basically takes place in this small town, small, like, industrial town, where it seems like a lot of these films we're talking about, it seems like a lot of, like, the only job of the town is at this mill. This is no exception. It starts out where the boy's mother, you know, it's off screen, of course, but they have this sign that is posted up that says, you know, no accidents for such and such days, but then the sign's taken down since one day that the main boy in the film, Joe, his mother died in an accident in his factory, and then that's the whole thing where he's left alone with his father, who's the deputy sheriff in the town, and And that play comes into play later, actually, too. But the heart of this film is the Joe and his friends are filmmakers. Charlie being the director and the visionary, and then all of his little buddies running around, and then they're gonna make a zombie film, which is really entertaining because you get to see the whole thing during the end credits. So they give you that something to watch throughout the whole film, and I gotta appreciate them for that, and even the end credits. And yeah, they're gonna make this movie, and then they get this idea to go film on a train platform, you know, which is part of their scene, I guess. And a real train actually comes, and it gets derailed by this man in a pickup truck, this unknown man in a pickup truck, and yeah, something really nasty comes out. And I gotta say that they did a real good job in the preview of this film. I remember seeing it like a Super Bowl or something. Of not telling you too much about the movie. And that's really hard with a movie, with a film like this, to make you want to see it. But they gave you just enough to give you a taste to say, okay, this is a movie that's made by an established director, produced by Steven Spielberg, and here's the teaser, and this is all you're going to get. Either come and see or not. Obviously, you got a little more later. You got a little more into the plot where you've seen like a later trailer, but you still didn't see the creature. You didn't see the creature. You didn't see that there even was a creature. It was just this phenomena that was going on. All you saw was this train door being propelled against these children who obviously scare their minds when this happens. But the government comes to town, and of course there's that whole deal. And for some reason that they're stealing their generators and engines out of cars, and all the dogs are running out of town all at once. You know, people are disappearing. Emily, what'd you think about this movie? I'm going like into a love fest about it over here.
You are. I can see you enjoyed it. I liked it as well, actually. I've not seen it before. And you are right. It came out in this sort of, oh my God, Super 8, it's the next big film. Ah. And then as soon as it was out, it just sort of disappeared under the waves a bit, and we never heard about it after that. It was very weird. I had seen the trailer, but I didn't really remember anything about it. I basically went in with, you know, fresh eyes, didn't really have any preconceptions about what was going to happen. And I really enjoyed it. I wasn't expecting to. I don't know, maybe because of the fact that it sort of disappeared after it came out, I sort of expected it to be just, you know, your average blockbuster Hollywood action movie. But it was a lot more than that. I like the... Oh, cat's awake. I like the character interactions. You know, they have this really great camaraderie, and it is funny listening to them talk sometimes. Just like, oh God, these kids are amazing. It was enjoyable, and you know, this blossoming adolescent romance that was developing between two of the characters was very, very sweet and genuine, and like not rushed or forced in any way, which was nice. And it took a sort of backseat in the way that like boys and girls at that age aren't particularly, you know, oh my God, I need to find someone to marry or anything. And I think there was a sort of honesty about the innocence of these developing feelings and growing up that was in the script, that I think a lot of adults try to write children, but not many of them manage it. And I think this is one of the rare times where the kids sounded like kids and acted like kids, as in terms of speech and plot, which was nice. The action and stuff was very interesting. Tense, I suppose. There were a couple of moments where I jumped, you know. I was waiting to see what happened next. I was, you know, engaged and excited by it. It was a great cast, and the collection of characters as well, not just the kids, the older characters too, I found very interesting. And I liked the way that the fathers especially developed from the kids' perspective. You know, at first we see them as sort of bad guys, and it's not particularly because they are bad people. It's more to do with the fact that the kids who we watch the film, you know, we follow them through the film. So when they see their parents as bad guys, that's kind of what we see them as too. And then it develops later on. And I thought that was nice and added to the realism. I love that they set it in the 70s. It was great. It was cool seeing all the outfits and the hair and the cars and everything. And I don't know, there's something quite... something about sort of sci-fi horror. I mean, not that this is particularly a horror film, but there are some, you know, scary moments. But there's something about these genres that lend themselves so well to sort of 70s and 80s time. And I think a big part of that is sort of the internet and mobile phones and things, but there's something else as well about it, and I don't really know what it is, but it works really well. Like, oh, what on earth is that film called? It's totally gone now. Nope, I've completely forgotten. I'm going to have to look it up now. 2 seconds.
While you're looking... This one did a real good job of capturing the era, though, like of that late 70s vibe, and I did like the relationship between that grew like with the two fathers, the deputy and Alice's father, who's a drunk as a, your first perception, and then, you know, as the
Conjuring,
the Conjuring, okay. Yeah, as the film progresses, you find out later that he didn't come to work that day, and that's why Joe's mother had to work that day, and that she died in a terrible accident. So there was a certain amount of guilt there that if he worked that day and she didn't work that day, that maybe he would have went, you know, cause he was just, I was just an alcoholic bastard. Cause he, it seemed like that, but there was like a moment of clarity later when they were driving in the car, him and Joe's father, the deputy Lamb were driving in the car, that they kind of understood each other. Like, you know, like, This is why you're acting the way you are towards me, because he obviously didn't want to have his daughter anything to do with his son Joe, and that was a point throughout this whole film, that keep your son away from my daughter. But it seemed like he was just like being a little drunk. But then there was a whole deal about, there was that certain guilt there. You find out much later about, and it's like, well, it all came into fruition that, you know, this is why yes. He wants to stay so distant from this family.
I think it unfolded very nicely as well. You know, I think sometimes when you've got a revelation like that, they hint towards it a lot. And not in a sort of clue way, like hinting at what's going to happen, but more in a sort of, there's something juicy coming up, so you have to keep watching sort of way. And they didn't do that at all. And then, you know, Elle Fanning sits down and reveals this whole side to the story that you didn't know. And kudos to her for that scene as well. I mean, through the whole film, I thought she was... really great. You know, she went from sort of her acting and then to her character acting and then sort of her character acting badly, and, you know, so there's all these different facets to what she did in this film, and she is only 16 now, so yeah, I'm impressed with her in that. But what I was saying before, before I forgot the film, The Conjuring, again, is a film set in the 70s, and it does, you know, it works really well. That's all I was trying to say, but it really annoyed me that I forgot the film. what else was I going to say? As I've already said, it was funny. Oh, that was my main thing about this film, the soundtrack. I was singing along the whole time. Yeah. It was amazing. It put me in such a good mood. Like the bit where they're sat outside waiting for the car and they're just having a little sing-song to themselves.
Doing the My Sharona bit, which is...
Yeah, My Sharona.
Which, unless it's in Reality Bites, I can get behind that song, you know?
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, I really love the kids in this movie. One of which has stood out to me was the one with the braces, Carrie, because I've seen him in stuff before, the little short one.
The little arsonist.
Yeah, I wanted to light shit on fire all the time. It was great, which comes into play later.
I love him.
Because his fireworks come in handy, of course. Yeah, it all happens for a reason, you know. And his little firebug ass comes in pretty handy later on. And I just seen him in a really hilarious episode of Workaholics, if you watch that show, where he plays this little fucking anarchist, or this leader of these anarchist people who. There's a scene where they're going to steal from the salad bar because they think the salad should be free. Little stupid shit like that. And there's another scene where they for some reason, they've collected all their piss in a vat, like a giant vat. And then they put it in a sprinkler system to pour on rich people. So now I see that kid here, and I see that kid on that episode. It's like, wow, that is so hilarious. And that kid is doing all that. Oh, man. And that's super funny to me, that seeing that kid like that. And All the kids worked well together in this movie, though. That's was the real heart of this movie, especially when their town is literally falling down around them because the alien in question is, which is, you see it, you don't even see it up close all that much. He's just terrorizing everything and shutting down the power grids, and there's a scene where they're just running around this town. It's a war zone now because there's these tanks literally roaming the streets, and the one kid gets hurt, and I love the scene where they go into the one house and the kid's drinking the soda. He's like, what are you doing? He says something along the line, like, I'm stressed or something like that. Like, why would it matter if you had to drink somebody soda in their house? You know, it's like,
I love that guy so much. He's so melodramatic and over the top, screaming at everyone. He's like, this is going to hurt. I haven't done it yet. I like them all. I like them all. I think they were great, great group of kids.
You had this whole idea of, you know, the government that I loved the doctor that only wanted to give the alien a ship back because that's all it wanted, and that's the guy that derailed the train just to sacrifice himself so this alien could finally leave our planet. And that it was just these little squares, and that eventually massively turned into a chip, you know, when they all came together. I thought that was a pretty cool special effect. And
yeah, that looked really cool.
And yeah, it's good. It's really, really good. I think you guys should all watch it. It's cool 2 hours. It's a little long, people might think, but I don't think it is.
No, I don't think so. It's paced very well. There's never any sort of dull moments. It works on, you know, several levels as well, because you do have the initial thing of this kid trying to make his little movie for the competition, and even when the alien is released and things start to go a bit weird, it's still focused on, you know, this weird stuff going on, but it's not that bad. So you just, you know, he's trying to get his camera fixed, he's trying to just do normal stuff, which is what you would do. And it's only when things get literally, you know, falling around their ears that they're like, we should probably do something about this.
Anything else you want to say about Super 8?
I think we should talk about the movie, like his little zombie flip, because that was amazing.
They were supposed to be like a really cheesy zombie flick about, you know, a zombie outbreak and that's supposedly budding, and Carrie playing your pretty much your only zombie in the whole movie.
He plays the zombie like four times.
I love that they recycle him in like four scenes.
I loved that. I thought that was brilliant.
And he's got the white eyes and the
yeah.
Is that like he lands it spot on if you're looking for like a cheesy zombie for even a kid.
He is great.
Pushing his head up against the wall and to kill him, and that was something special. And
yeah, that was a good little sequence.
You got the whole movie during the end credits, and if you never watched a movie before, stick around for the credits because you get something throughout the whole thing.
Yes, and Joe's terrible acting as the soldier. Yes. I wouldn't have done this for you if we weren't together in Nam. Yes, those were difficult times.
they were indeed difficult times. Yes. Oh man.
And then Alice is the wife, because they need a wife to build on the story, and she turns out to actually be quite good, quite a good little actor. But I noticed in the film, in the final cut, they didn't really have any of the moments where she was good.
Just the train gig, and then
yelling over the train. He wrote this really emotive scene, and then they end up just screaming at each other because there's a train 4 feet away from
him. And then Charlie's only bitch at Joe is that, you know, that if only he let him blow up his model train.
Yeah.
And the fact that he supposedly stole his chick, who isn't anybody's girlfriend, by the way, until kind of the end when they all come together, you know.
I love that he builds another train for them to blow up, and they have that in the movie.
Looks,
and they
just, so
for the
bad,
sound effects, the sound effects is just the kids going.
You know, Carrie had some kind of firecracker to put in there. I swear, just because he seems like the kid that can build shit just to blow up, you know.
That was a great film. And then I love the the sort of the main actor dude who doesn't really do much apart from that, but I quite like how serious he is about his craft, and he adds in a new line and he's having a bit of a nervous breakdown. He's like, what new lines now? And he's explaining it to him. He goes, listen, it goes, I love you too. See how it flows? And he's like, really? And he's having trouble grasping that. It's beautiful. And of course, the end of the little film was the gem, I think. You don't see this bit sort of in the main movie at all. It's just in the end sequence, which is why you have to watch it, where they have the sort of, you know, the director sat down with his with his pipe and his big book of stories, and he's talking about them, and then we have yet another reveal of the token zombie.
Just like your Alfred Hitchcock or your
exactly like that. That was good. That was like, even if you hate the entire film, that little moment there was totally worth it.
Yeah, I don't think you hate this movie. I think it's really terrific.
Oh no, I don't think you would. But if you did,
it's on. I think it was on Netflix instead, but now it's no longer on there. But I think you can get it on DVD for nothing. So I'd recommend.
Yeah, it's been out a few
years. I'd recommend going to get it because I really like it, and I really really like it. I think you guys all should watch it. Now, if you feel like watching again the movie about kids acting like kids but not being obnoxious, but just real people about in with the alien invasion thrown in, you'll love Super 8, and I recommend it. You too. Scores now? What do you give it, Bird?
I'm going to give it a solid 8 for Super 8.
Beautiful. This is 9 for me. I don't think I dislike any part of this movie, actually, so let's try to find the words there.
I can't really find any flaws with it at all.
But, that's about it. And we'll roll right into your movie. Tell the folks what it is. Yes,
I chose Storage 24, and I did have IMDb open, but I closed it because I'm an idiot. 2 seconds, I will find the synopsis for you. That is a completely different film. There we go. In London, a military plane crashes, leaving its highly classified contents strewn across the city. Completely unaware that the city is in lockdown, a group of people become trapped inside a storage facility with a highly unwelcome guest. It's written by Noel Clarke, and it stars Noel Clarke, who is most notably from Doctor Who. I suppose that's what most people would recognise him from, where he plays Mickey, who is Billy Piper's boyfriend before she falls in love with the Doctor. That's what most people would know him from, I think. But he is sort of an up-and-coming actor in England. I think he's very good, which is what drew me to this film in the first place. It's, on a similar note, it is about sort of aliens and things crash-landing to Earth and things like that, but it takes a very British response, in that the thing people are annoyed about is being late and getting stuck in traffic and things like that, which is what we do. We complain about the weather and the traffic. Noel plays a very uptight character called Charlie, who's just broken up with his girlfriend, and they have a storage locker together with sort of the overspill of all their things. So they both go to this storage locker to separate out, you know, divvy up the possessions and see who gets what. And they both bring a friend. Well, actually, Shelley, the girlfriend, brings two friends. So it ends up with these five people awkwardly stuck together in this tiny little storage room, trying to sort through this very messy breakup. At the same time, some weird alien creature is in the building, like not obviously their little lock, but the whole building, tearing random people to tiny pieces. And the two storylines come together in a messy, awkward breakup mess of blood and gore.
Yeah, that sounds that's a good rundown of this movie. this to me, it was good. It was fun sci-fi fare. You had the isolation. You know, because for some reason this place is locked down and they cannot get out for some reason, which I refuse to believe. If there's a certain hole in this plot, I refuse to believe there's nobody there that has a key to get out. But
Well, no, I think it's that because this classified thing has, you know, escaped into the open, they've sort of been put into quarantine. Okay. I think that's basically what it is, you know, because there was that gate thing and it sort of locked without them asking it to, didn't it? Which is why the engineer guy was there.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So I think some higher power, quote unquote, has put it in lockdown so that nobody gets out.
Those crazy UK government people. Oh, boy. Yeah, I think it'd be really funny first of all, I'm going to say this without saying anything else about the movie. It'd be really funny if there was an Asylum equivalent to this movie, where they brought the stars from Storage Wars to be in this movie, and then, you know, they made it hilarious, you know?
Yes, that would be cool.
And
There were some funny moments.
Oh, it was pretty funny. I love the fact that you got the crazy guy that lives in the storage locker, because yes, you would want that in this movie, and you got it, you know?
It does relieve the tension a little bit. They're all just sort of discovering what's going on, and then this guy comes and threatens them with an electric toothbrush.
It is a robe. I think it was some kind of kimono. I don't know what he was wearing, but
yeah, that was some wacky outfit.
the whole love triangle deal where you find out that the one that was bedding down with his lady is actually in there with them, and you know, it was some.
Yeah. Supposedly his best friend,
because that happens, and mm-hmm. and that's a real small part of this movie, because there's a lot of cool stuff that happens. This is basically Alien inside of a storage facility, and it breaks right down to it with, you know, even them, as far as them going through the ducts for, you know, if there's ducts in a movie, they know just where to go, apparently, you know, but this one, they actually tell them, you know. If you go straight down, there's all the good stuff down there. So apparently they're going to find all kinds of weapons and stuff in these storage facility. Maybe. Because you don't know what's in these lockers anyway.
Which is why it's like storage.
Yeah. And, the characters play together really well. Like I said, I love the crazy guy that lives in the storage locker. Because that was what you needed in this movie. If there wasn't one, I'd be upset. You know? Because I know that happens. And that's a thing. And the alien looked really cool. There was a lot of great. It was a lot of CG gore, but not in a terrible way. Cause
yeah, it wasn't ridiculously over the top or anything.
When he's ripping folks apart, though, it looks really cool, and the gore is there in your face, and I can appreciate that in a movie like this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're in a tiny little room, there's not really anywhere else for the gore to go. So I'm glad they stuck with it and didn't do any, you know, pullaways or anything.
Yeah, but that'd be really easy to do. Just say, like, he's breathing in their face, and then, you know, just it cuts away, and, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't do that in this movie. You got to see full living color, you know, and just creature doing what the creature does, and with his mandible face and. I don't even know. It looked like little fingers. I don't even know what the hell was going on with his face.
I was a little bit skeptical about one almost death, though, I have to say.
What was that?
The engineer dude who I mentioned before literally gets torn in half from the waist down. And then, like, 2 hours later, he's like, hey, how you doing, guys? Yeah. What? I mean, I'm not a scientist, so somebody please tell me if that could actually happen, but I am a little bit skeptical. He was just lying there in the basement, ripped into pieces, you know. I'd like the character development of Charlie, though, because the movie opens and he's stuck in this car being irritating as shit. Oh my god, you want to punch him? You know, he's complaining about his ex-girlfriend over and over again, and, you know, telling his mate to wind the window down because he's smoking, and getting them to beep the horn, and just being generally that annoying guy that just never stops, you know. And then towards the end of the movie, he doesn't change exactly, but, you know, his focus isn't on the girl that broke his heart and he doesn't know why anymore. And you sort of see the characters sort of react differently to them as differently to him, sorry, as they sort of go, actually, yeah, you're all right, aren't you? You know, and they see that he's the braver one, really. He's honest, and he has been from the start, and he may have been irritating at points, but he's actually a decent bloke. And I think that was a nice little sort of development as the movie went, is to how his character really came through.
Yeah, it was a nice turn for him, because he seemed like this real snide, uptight, yuppie mm-hmm. type in a way that was just bitter all the time. But then he figured that, you know, if they're going to live, they got to work together. Yeah. But then you get an ending like you do, which you don't. Which is, you guys don't win anyway, you know.
Yeah, I love the bit where they finally get out and they're in the car park and there is just this little thing that happened at the beginning, and then she just turns to him and goes, "Did you steal the windscreen wiper off my car?" And he's like, "Yeah." Because at that point, doesn't matter.
Yeah, because this ends with a fuck you ending, like, you know. It begins with a ship crash landing into somebody's car, destroying their car, and, wow, that's inconvenient, and... You know, what's this craft? And then there's a whole full-on alien invasion happening when they finally get out of this place. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that they have about 30 seconds reprieve where they're out in the open, like, oh my god, we won, we killed it. And then there's like, oh, there's a million more of them. Shit. And there's something you don't really see a lot in alien invasion movies. I like that they played on the monster's ignorance. Yeah. You know, there's a little bit where they set him up with this little yappy toy dog, and he has no idea it's not a real dog. Obviously, he's just landed on Earth. He has no idea that it's battery-operated and not some evil creature that's going to kill him. So it's, you know, yapping away, crawling towards him, and he's actually quite intimidated by it, and he backs up a little bit. And he's like, whoa. I thought that was quite sweet.
I love the scene. You mentioned science, and I know that a heart can beat, you know, for so many seconds is after it's, you know, pulled from your body. But there's that scene where the creature rips the guy's heart out. He's just kind of showing it to him, like, yeah, you see it, that he crushes it, of course. And, yeah. You know, that was pretty cool. Like, this creature is sadistic, and I can get behind this creature killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene alone, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm gonna like this creature, you know, just...
Yeah. And as you mentioned, I mean, it is all CG, but I do like its weird little finger, crooked, talony thingies that it's got all over it in its mouth.
They were
weird and definitely original. I've never seen that before.
You see it on The Predator, but not quite as extreme, you know?
Yeah, kind of. It's kind of like The Predator... I was going to say tentacles, but it's not those. Like, The Predator things that it's got round its mouth, but... He's got the ones around its mouth, but he's also got loads of tiny little ones actually in its mouth as well.
Yeah, real close in there.
Which was interesting. I really liked the death of the guy who sort of the manager or whatever he is, you know, the desk guy. Because you just see him freaking out, and this guy's like, "What the hell are you doing? Calm down!" And then he vanishes, and then you see the second guy who was the calm one in that situation now completely catatonic. And, you know, she slowly wipes the blood off his face, looking for a cut of some kind. She can't find one. And then a little bit of blood drops on his face, and she realizes it's coming from above. And they have a look, and it's just, you know, it's all calm, and there's nothing here for a second. And then you just get this reveal, and it's so satisfying. You know, it looks really good, I think.
Yeah, it does. And it like I said, there's a lot of CG blood here, a lot of CG everything, but it's not... I mentioned Asylum earlier. I mean, it's not Asylum type, you know. It's like, wow, this is so wacky.
It's not Blood Lake.
This is so wacky, you know. It's so funny, too. And they managed to add, like, a little fun. So, like you said, the toy dog flipping around and to distract him. Oh, you're so distracted, stupid alien. And, you know, and whatever you are, I don't know what the hell it is at that point. They all see this little projectile that crashed into somebody's car. So you had to assume it was an alien. And, yeah... But yeah, the little stuff like that, but then you manage to be crazy vicious and crazy kills, and a lot of these folks, like, wow, they're all expendable. I hope they are, because I'm kind of rooting for the creature here just to do more death and destruction and kill all these people. And, you know, of course, they're going to get the upper hand eventually and kill the creature, but, you know, because that's how these movies end. But that doesn't have that ending, because there's tons more creatures now waiting for you outside. And no one's situation. I love a good fuck you ending. This one had it.
Yeah, it was a good ending. I mean, there's movies that have a similar ending and sort of like, see the sequel, you know, but this didn't sort of set up the next movie. It just sort of went, ah, you think it's all over? Well, it's not, ha ha ha, and then finished, which is nice. What was I going to say? I do really like Charlie, actually. I mean, he annoys me at the beginning, but he again, it's a very British thing, I think, where something's going horribly wrong, and instead of freaking out and screaming because you've just seen your mate torn to pieces, you make a sarcastic comment about something that someone's wearing. It's so English. So yeah, that's probably what I'd be doing in that situation as well.
Who wears that sweater to an alien invasion? You would, you know. But yeah, there's so much to get right about this movie. It's kind of hard for me to pick at the little stuff, so that's about the last thing I'm going to say about this movie, really.
And I will just say that it's sort of, it's got the right balance of, you know, tense and gore, and it is a horror movie. It's not a comedy horror. It is a horror, you know, maybe sci-fi sort of film, but there are comic moments. It's not a comedy film, but there are moments that are quite funny, and it just breaks the film up nicely, and I think it's got a nice sort of flow to it.
Great. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. That's why it was it ran so good. Both films kind of flowed pretty good this week. But as far as scores go, what do you give it for a final score?
I think I'm going to give it a 6.5. Definitely not as good as Super 8, but nothing inherently wrong with it. Apart from one character development that I couldn't really get behind. It seemed a little bit of a stretch to me, but it's a bit of a spoiler, so I won't explain
it. Fair enough. Yeah, I'm going a little higher than you. I mean, I'm going to go with a 7 on this one. I really enjoyed it, and it's available on Netflix streaming and in the States, and I don't know about the UK, but there's ways around that. Give it a watch. I recommend it. There you go.
Yeah. And just as a side note, since I mentioned IMDb before, this film's only got a 4.4 rating, you know, which I think is the lowest out of all of the films that I've mentioned today. And yet we both came in with, you know, compliments and quite high scores. So, yeah, I think it's definitely worth giving it a chance.
And right after this, we'll come back to close out the show.
Cube loves horror movies.
I like them cheesy. I like them gritty. I like them campy. I love them all.
He married Christy. She hates them.
I think they're senseless and upsetting.
Listen in as Cube searches through shelves of DVDs, VHS, and Blu-ray.
There are too many of these movies on the shelves. We need to just start getting rid of them.
In his never-ending quest to convert his lovely wife to the dark side.
Come to the dark side.
In Christy's horror.
My name is X.
And I'm Cootie.
Please consider us your high priest
and priestess
of satanic cinema.
Join us on our podcast, Kiss the Goat, which will drag your soul through some of the finest
and worst
devil movies of the last 50 years.
Devils and demons, exorcisms and possessions,
cults and rituals, dogs and cats living together.
Is that a devil movie?
Maybe. Sort of.
I don't know, babe.
We'll talk about it later. Join us on the Horrorphilia Podcast Network every other week as we don our hoods and cloaks and
kiss
the goat.
It's a hell of a good time.
I knew you were going to say that.
Of course you did. It's in the script.
We have just seen rushes direct from Hollywood of pictures being released in the coming weeks. And we're proud to announce that this theater will soon bring you the greatest array of pictures ever to reach our screen. You'll see the finest stars in exciting performances. You'll thrill to the suspense, comedy, romance, and drama of world-famous stories. Here's a glimpse of a few of them coming to this theater soon.
And I'm 29 years old.
You're 31.
Precisely my point. I'm getting older. I see what you've got. Stability, trust, permanence. And I think, God, I'm glad I'm not you.
I feel like I've known heck all my life. What, there's some gorgeous women around?
Yes, there are. And I'm trying to sleep with as many as I can.
Anyway, how about you? Married?
Well, I'm gay.
Hmm.
Have you ever met someone? But there was someone else already.
She's a lesbian.
Is that right?
What are you guys up to? Nothing.
Anything that slightly impedes your plans for seduction?
Anyone can change teams. Not anyone. I wouldn't, because, you know, but anyone.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
No.
I think you know immediately when you suddenly realised you have been incomplete and now you are whole.
Triton?
You make me feel something I absolutely cannot feel.
I know.
He's my best friend.
Wish me luck.
Wish you luck.
It's a wedding. Bridesmaids always pull at weddings.
Does she love you?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, it's all that matters.
Don't move. The girl back there that I never called back. Just stay perfectly still, okay? Let's try this.
There's a difference between like and love. Because I like my Skechers, but I love my Prada backpack.
Bianca Stratford is the most popular girl at Padua High.
You're asking me out?
I'm down. I've got the 411, and you are not going out and getting jiggy with some boy. I don't care how dope his ride is.
Her sister, Kat, is something else entirely.
People perceive you as somewhat tempestuous. Heinous witch is the term used most often.
The only thing they have in common...
I am the only girl in school who's not dating.
Oh, no, you're not. Your sister doesn't date.
...is one simple rule.
Okay, you can date. When she does.
But she's a mutant. What if she never dates?
Then you'll never date. Oh, I like that.
For Cameron,
no one will go out with her.
It's a problem.
Would any of you be interested in dating Katarina Stratford?
Maybe if we were the last two people alive and there were no goats. Are there goats?
For Patrick.
And what about him? I heard he ate a live duck once.
Everything but the beak and feet.
It's a challenge.
So you two are gonna help me tame the wild beast.
Absolutely.
And for Kat.
Kat.
It's about time.
Well, come on, think about it. Me with my arm around you.
You covered in my vomit.
I'd like to discuss tomorrow night with you. Now, as you know, it's the prom.
Touchstone Pictures presents...
Stay cool, bro.
Yes, you.
A story for every guy who's ever tried.
You never give up, do you?
Was that a yes?
No.
Well, then was that a no?
No.
Every girl who's ever hoped.
You're not as vile as I thought you were.
This is not good.
And anyone who's ever been taken completely by surprise.
She kissed me.
Where?
In the car.
You're concentrating awfully hard considering it's gym class.
Things I Hate About You.
All right, Bird. Episode 13's in the can. Tell the folks what we have planned for next time around.
Next time, we are doing a genre that I'm not a big fan of. We are going into romance, or more specifically, rom-coms. And I have chosen the 2005 Brit film Imagine Me and You, directed by Ol Parker, written by Ol Parker, starring Piper Perabo, who is one of yours, I believe, Beard.
Yeah, she's one of ours, I believe, yeah.
Lena Headey, Matthew Good, Darren Boyd, I suppose, and a lot of other recognisable people who I'll go more into next time, obviously. The basic synopsis, as you probably heard from the trailer, but a newlywed bride becomes infatuated with another woman who questions her sexual orientation, promoting a stir among the bride's family and friends. That's not a very good synopsis, but we'll thank IMDb for that.
I don't have this... synopsis for mine, but the one I picked for what we picked together, because I'm not good at picking these, because we are neither one of us big fans of the romantic comedy genre, is Ten Things I Hate About You, which is a pretty well-known one, but one that I could tolerate, you know, to actually talk fondly of, because it's a pretty decent film from that time, starring a bunch of young Hollywood, including Julia Stiles, the late Heath Ledger. Another Jiggle film, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in this movie. We love the Jiggles on this show. Jiggles, yes. Larissa Leniak, who I fell in love with on Nickelodeon's Alex Mack. You know, she's in this movie.
Allison Janney.
Allison Janney is hilarious in this movie.
One of my favorite people.
She's hilarious.
She's hilarious in everything. She's fantastic.
I forget if she puts a... What's another word for engorged? You know, that's one of her lines in this movie.
Oh, dear.
But yeah. Yeah, the cheap synopsis from IMDb is a new kid must find a guy to date the meanest girl in school, the other sister of a girl he has a crush on who cannot date unless her older sister does. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff, though. I enjoyed that movie, and I think it's pretty funny. I believe it's a taking on Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And, same with... what is that movie? That Amanda Bynes film, She's the Man, is 12th Night.
Yeah. Yeah, and if we ever do that movie, I'll have a rant about that movie pretty good, so eventually.
What, She's the Man?
She's the Man, yes.
We should do a cross-dressing episode.
Goddamn fucking 80s rehashes. No, I'm not even going to go into it right now, but, you know, there you go again. There I go again talking shit about a movie I've never seen before. I've only seen previews of, but, you know. But, yeah, anything you got coming up at all, Bird? Tell the folks.
Well, as a belated birthday experience extravaganza, I am going to London in a couple of weeks, so that will be good. I will keep you posted. I will be going to see Made in Dagenham, the musical, which I'm very excited about. It stars the wonderful Gemma Arterton. As far as I know, the women that the film was based on, the real women who worked in Dagenham in the Ford car company, have been sort of closely involved in the musical as well. So it should be, you know, an honest yet fun story, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it. So I will let you know how that goes. I'll probably do a video diary thing like I did last time I went to London with my lovely friend Liam. You can find the last one on YouTube if you are so interested, as well as my birthday trip from a couple of years ago when I went to London as well. It's basically just me ranting about trains and going, so I met this famous person, and then I met this famous person, which is how I spend my life, really.
It's a good way to spend time. Oh, boy. Anything come up on the terror troop for you at all?
Possibly, yes. I was meant to do something on Friday, I think, but I didn't get back from work in time, so I just couldn't do it. So we'll probably be doing that in the near future. It'll be another episode with me and Malky, the two token Brits, as it were. which is a good thing I'm allowed to say that, since if Scotland had voted yes, then we might have had to word that a little differently. So, yeah, look out for that in the near future. It will be a Bigfoot movie, but I will not spoil it any more than
beautiful.
That.
But, yeah, as far as me goes, you know, as far as I go, you know,
As far as me goes.
Yeah, somebody use that from now on. As far as me goes.
Yes.
Today's terrible English day, you know, but, yeah, I always have stuff going on because I'm bored and usually up for anything. So I got approached by my cousin's son today because he wants to start a wrestling podcast. So I'll be involved in that in some kind of capacity, either TV producer or part of the show or something. He wants to get his feet wet, basically, so that untitled wrestling show will be happening. He wants to record sometime next week, so that's going to be happening.
Cool.
Brand new show, see again, with myself and Eric Bergstrom. I pulled him out of the fire to do an all-sequel show aptly titled Sloppy Seconds for the horror... Yeah, you're going to giggle at all the time. For the Horrorphilia Network that she recorded on Sunday with an undisclosed movie, which we will reveal later. Cinema Beef is just going on. I just edited the show with Vaughn, where he basically kills every aspect of love you could ever have for John Hughes in about a 30-minute review of The Breakfast Club, you know?
Oh,
yeah, it's pretty brutal. And I was like, I was almost convinced at the end there that he was right, you know. But yeah, that's out. What's that show called? Oh yeah, the Two Trickman Commentaries is still happening. Our Halloween month is coming up, which is October 1st today. So we are recording I'm Madman on Friday, with a whole bunch of Halloween goodies to be had after that, including Ernest Scared Stupid to be released on Halloween Day. So you guys can watch it at night for yourselves. Even you folks in the UK, I'm sure, release it early enough for you guys to watch it. And I think you might be on that one, huh? I asked you, you know. I'm recording early enough for the UK peeps to get on, you know.
Oh, yes, that one. Sorry, I was thinking about something else completely different one that you asked me to do that I couldn't do in the end because you had too many people on that one. I thought you meant that one. So many podcasts!
So many podcasts, yes!
Yes, I might be available. I hope I am. I definitely
will figure it out.
I should be. Fingers crossed.
Terror Troop happens when I'm on there. Just like, the place doesn't run without me. That's not true. I am occasionally on Terror Troop, though, when I can make the night to be on Terror Troop. You know? Boss works real hard. You guys should listen to the show because I put the link up in all of our show notes. So take a look, people. And, yeah, come like us on Facebook. Come review us on iTunes. You get the chance to win something from me. So a couple select autographs and a couple other select items. Might sweeten the pot a little more for you people if you guys really get into it. Emily told me that a couple of her mates gave us some reviews, and thank you all. When I get to them, I will read them on the air, probably on episode 14, to thank all you lovely people, including your buddy, the Lost Voice guy. What's up, my brother? And, yeah, and that's about it for me. Just keep on listening. We appreciate it very, very much. But, anything else you want to say? Any parting words for the people there, Bird?
Pretty much just what you've said. Thank you so much for listening this far, and stick with us, and, you know, kidnap your friends and make them listen to us too, because, you know, we're vain and we like talking and hearing the sound of our own voices, and we think you should too.
Duct tape the earbuds to their ears, people, and try not to 11. No, do that. No, don't do that. It might damage your earbuds that way. So their ear, delicate ear passages, if you will. We decided to do it.
It's gone a bit sexual.
We decided to do a metal episode or something. We started singing terrible lyrics the whole time. the bird sings Fuck Like a Beast by Wasp, and, you know, you guys could be very entertained. I'd actually never do that, but I'd find it very entertaining, you know.
I'll have you know I'm an excellent singer. Thank you.
I know you are, and I'm a terrible singer, as you found out, you know. But
Oh, but you are adorable, and that makes up for it.
But, yeah, with that, I'll say goodbye to all you lovely people, and we'll see you guys all again on episode 14.
See you soon.